Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me via Skype is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we have a lot of trade deadline stuff to talk about, but not a lot of it having to do with the Islanders, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was. I kind of take full responsibility. I realized the other day that this is the first trade deadline without Snow or Milbury in basically my whole life. I think I was six the last time. And I tweeted it out and jinxed it because things didn't go as planned. I actually thought I would be a lot more upset if this was going to be the case, because I kind of had an inkling last night that this was going to be the case, and I thought I was going to be a lot more upset than I am. But, you know, it is what it is, and there's nothing you or me or anybody else can do about it.
Yeah. I was alive when Don Maloney was the GM, and I don't remember trade deadlines being a thing at all, let alone at that time. But, yeah, this is a different time, and now we get to talk about him. And, you know, regardless of the fact that the Islanders didn't do anything, there is still stuff to talk about, because this is kind of one of those, you know, signpost moments of the season. And joining us to talk about where the Islanders stand after the trade deadline is a man who has taken far too long to come on the show because I am lazy and had not reached out to him previously, but it is our friend, Lighthouse Hockey contributor, founder of the Cap Space and all around Islanders Twitter guy, Carey Haber. Carey, what's going on?
Hey guys, how are you?
Very good. Finally glad you can make it onto the show again. This has been a long time coming and should have happened a long time ago, and I blame myself for that. the Islanders didn't make any trades today. We'll talk about Dennis Seidenberg, I guess, in a little while, because I guess we have to. But basically, you know, we were kind of afraid this was going to happen, but I guess it has become a reality. Maybe it's not as bad as we thought, but their big acquisitions are going to be guys that they kind of already had already. That would be Andrew Ladd and Thomas Hickey, who are pretty much ready to play. And then some guys they have in the minors, Michael Dak Cole and Josh Hosang being first among them. So I guess my question is, relative to what everybody else did, this is kind of a broad question. Feel free to narrow it down a little bit. But, you know, relative to what everybody else did in the division, are Ladd and Hickey really going to kind of push the needle and help the Islanders you know, finally lock down this first place setting that they've had this whole time, or are they just kind of screwed themselves over, basically?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, the first thing I've already learned tonight is that this whole thing is Mike's fault. So now that we've established that, we can, I guess, get more into the brass tacks of all of this. You know, the truth is, I think the Islanders are an improved team with Andrew Ladd and Thomas Hickey, but it's kind of marginal in the sense of, like, these were guys that they already had in their organization, guys that they were already expected to come back. And obviously that's now the case. So, you know, it's hard to call that piece of this a success, so to speak. And, you know, when you look around the division, Columbus obviously being the team that made the most noise in the league, you know, they're obviously a much improved club. Moving a step down, you look at Washington and what they did and what Pittsburgh did. And these guys coming back, I think, are more in line with the acquisitions that those two teams made. Andrew Ladd, before he got hurt, was kind of all over the lineup a little bit, but he's had really good success with Matthew Barzal in the past. He'll be there tomorrow night. So there's a chance that, you know, they can rekindle some of their past success. Thomas Hickey's going to step in for Scott Mayfield, it looks like, and I think the Islanders have a pretty good situation on defense where they have seven guys that can rotate in and out of the lineup. So, you know, in terms of where they were tomorrow relative to Sunday, they're probably a little bit improved, but obviously missing out on some of the guys that were moved. I think the opportunity cost of that isn't going to make a lot of fans happy, and I understand that.
Yeah, we kind of miss out on the fun of the trade deadline. Like, oh, this is the new guy who's come in. I wish, you know, where's he going to go? And he's like the new toy. You're like, oh, how do we do this? And, you know, when the new toy is an old toy you already had and, like, already kind of passed judgment on, in the case of Andrew Ladd especially, it is a little bit disappointing. But, you know, I thought, you know, Lamoriello gave quotes at the end, and the whole 10-minute thing is kind of worth watching. And his big thing, the big takeaway, and Arthur Staple, I'm reading this off his Twitter feed right now, which, you know, kind of gets to the point, which was Lamoriello said, we weren't going to sacrifice our plan here. You don't do something just for the sake of doing it. We are pleased with where we are. Columbus, like you said, made a lot of noise. The Golden Knights made the most noise by swooping in and grabbing Mark Stone towards the end, while everybody kind of had their eyes on him. You know, there's something to, as much as disappointed as we might be that the additions are guys that we know already, there's something to be said for keeping your best prospects, right? Like, that's kind of a silver lining in all this, is they didn't lose a Noah Dobson or a Oliver Wallstrom or one of those guys, right? I mean, that there's value there. They also had their first-round pick still, too.
Yeah, so the way that I see this is, you know, the way that Lamoriello approached the deadline was he had kind of a high-risk, high-reward strategy, in the sense that the guys at the Islanders, by all accounts, were in on Matt Duchene, Mark Stone. These were the prize prospects or prize players of this deadline. And, you know, sometimes when there's only a handful of them, you're going to strike out. And that's what happened today. Certainly, you know, in light of that, obviously the Islanders don't improve their club with some of those minor guys. But by all the statistical models, and obviously we see it on the ice, this team, as it stands, I would call them somewhat of a fringe contender in terms of their recent play and kind of where they stack up against other playoff teams. So, you know, you want to play out, or your Stanley Cup chances, from a couple percentage points to 5 or 6%. Is that worth potentially 7+ years of Noah Dobson or Oliver Wallstrom? Those are the questions that I would imagine they are considering when, you know, they have these discussions. Guys like Matt Duchene and Mark Stone, clearly to kind of fit that bill, but as you move down, perhaps maybe not spending those draft picks for some of that second or third tier may be beneficial to the Islanders, since they could use those picks again in the summer for other players who they get the season out of. So,
And it's a possibility that the guys who move today end up being UFAs too, so that's another way to keep those draft picks and stuff too, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's really about risk reward, and they had a strategy where they were going for the highest reward and it didn't work out, and that's something that, you know, they have to live with now, with the team being what it is. Right. So
you brought up their recent play, and to be quite blunt, it hasn't been very good. They came off that that three-game Western Canadian trip. They didn't play particularly well in the first two spots against in Calgary and in Edmonton. Lost one, lost another one in overtime. Do you think Ladd and Hickey can kind of bring them back to the place where they were, you know, mid-December into January, when they really were hot and really were on that roll and kind of built themselves up into the first place, you know, team that we see now? Because, I mean, forget about the playoffs. Like, let's just talk about getting them straightened out right now, because they play Calgary on Tuesday night, and they don't want a repeat of what happened in Calgary last Tuesday or whatever it was, because they kind of got smoked. But, I mean, with Hickey coming back, replacing Mayfield at least for once, and then Ladd, anybody replacing Tom Kuhnhackl is probably a good thing, but is Ladd the kind of guy who can help them get back to that place where they were and you know, where they were their best this season?
It's hard to answer that, because when you talk about Andrew Ladd versus Josh Hosang versus Michael Dunkel, they're all three different kind of players. Michael Dunkel is more of a defensive minded player. Josh Hosang more of a play driving player, doesn't really shoot the puck. Andrew Ladd is kind of the antithesis of both of those guys. He's not really a play driver. He shoots the puck a lot, and he has, obviously, higher upside in terms of NHL production. So, you know, he comes into a spot where I assume he's going to essentially be asked to play the trigger man role for Matthew Barzal, and the two of them certainly have had chemistry in the past. So it's quite possible that it does work. The answer is that's a level where they can get back to you know, the play where they were at in early January or so. Tough to say. I would personally feel more comfortable with some of those kids in the lineup. I showed, even though it's not necessarily their what their reputation is, they showed they can play in those roles. So it will be interesting to see how that meshes with Leo Komarov, who obviously is not really a defensive or offensive player. a guy. But it certainly, I think Ladd is a higher upside player than Tom Kuhnhackl. That's probably putting it lightly. So just by that nature alone, like when the addition of if you consider Andrew Ladd to be a okay third liner, that's well above what the level that Tom Kuhnhackl was playing at. So, by nature, an upgrade.
Yeah. Safe to say that.
I think Ladd, first of all, like, he's obviously been hurt, so this is kind of, you know, obvious point. But, you know, he's fresh, and there should be some sort of, you know, prove it kind of this to his game. I think he, you know, he's missed out on an entire season now, and a very, very magical one at that. So, like, why wouldn't this guy should want to come in and be guns blazing? So I'm kind of excited, and I think actually the same kind of logic can be applied to Beauvillier, in a sense that he was kind of a guy who made, like, you look around that room and you're like, all right, like, if someone's traded for Mark Stone, it's gonna be me. I don't think these they're all human. They read the paper, they read Twitter, whatever. So I think, like, I'm interested to watch the two of them big time. Beauvillier will have a little bit of a weight off his shoulders. Ladd, who will now be looking to put up or shut up and kind of earn his contract and take advantage of the fact that he's healthy. So I don't know. I think there's, like, some, if you take, you got to look at the silver linings. It's disappointing. This nothing came to fruition at the deadline, especially because, you know, the team worked so hard to get to this point where they're in first place at the trade deadline, which is a miracle in itself. And you'd hope that, you know, you everyone kind of hoped that Lou would then just kind of double down on that, on this, like, you know, don't look a gift horse in the mouth kind of thing. And, but you know what, if you think about it, like, This team has been good enough to get to this point. The only team in the division that really got much better is the Blue Jackets. The Penguins got worse. I mean, the best news all day was when the Penguins traded for Eric Gudbrandsen.
Oh, man. This has been so entertaining all day, honestly.
Like, I was and the Capitals shored up some depth. I think Jensen and Hagelin were kind of shrewd moves in, like, the Michael Kempney mode. But, like, the division is still there for the taking, and this team has been good enough to get to this point. So you just hope to God that, you know, the goaltenders continue to stand on their heads and the Islanders continue to get a break or two here or there.
Yeah, that's what it is. And you know, first of all, with regards to the Penguins, yeah, I mean, that Jack Johnson, Eric Gudbrandsen pairing is going to be absolutely fantastic to watch.
It's going to be like, do you remember when they got Douglas Murray and they played him with Brooks Orpik? I don't know if Orpik was still on the team then. Because I just remember being like, anytime Douglas Murray was on the ice in that playoff series against us, I was like, all right, like, this is our 45 seconds to own the puck.
So, did they trade two draft picks for Doug Murray? They gave up like two draft picks for him or something.
I guess. I think that so.
That was the year they won against Jerome or with Jerome McGinley.
Right.
There was another guy that they brought in that I can't remember right now, but that was the year they played the Islanders in the first round. That obviously didn't end well for the Islanders. But yeah, they certainly had some holes on that squad, which and all those moves were actually really interesting because they kind of came at a time where the analytics, I guess, really started to take off in terms of their popularity. And there were a lot of debate at that point, like trading for Douglas Murray and the price that they paid for it. And it was kind of split between the old hockey thinking of, well, this is a, you know, crease clear that plays in front of the net versus, well, yeah, he's actually probably not that good. And it didn't really work out for them. But I think in terms of other teams in the division, Columbus, to be honest, is probably a more complete team than the Islanders at this point. But it is obviously worth noting the Islanders have a fairly sizable point advantage of them at the right now. So it's tough to make up in 20 games of goaltending for New York. Is the way it is, and if that's the case, then you know the Islanders really are looking at if they don't win the division, home ice advantage.
Yeah, that kind of leads me to sort of a general Islanders question. I mean, we can only talk about Andrew Ladd so much, but I kind of a general Islanders question. I mean, your charts that you put out every single day are like invaluable for sort of tracking the Islanders' progression, especially this season as they've had this sort of unbelievable journey. Under Barry Trotz, and you've been kind of like the main guy to sort of be like, no, this is not a PDO driven thing. This is not all about shooting percentage and save percentage. This is about a team that's kind of putting it together and doing things that good teams do to win games. How would you summarize sort of how the Islanders got here? Like the formula for how the Islanders got here. Obviously, good goaltending is probably one huge portion of it. But I mean, they play as solid a defensive game in the league, right? I mean, this hasn't been like a mirage. We're really not seeing we're seeing what the team really is, right? They just don't give up high danger chances. That's kind of been the big thing all season, right?
Yeah, no, that's completely correct. As of a couple of days ago, they were fifth in the league in expected goals against per hour, at like 2.18, I think it was, which is pretty outstanding. That's a number. That is clearly driven by structure and players buying into the system that Barry Trotz is preaching. He is a coach that preaches quality chances over quantity chances. And we've seen that all year, just with the Islanders' scoring chance rates and their high danger chance rates, well outperforming what their overall shot attempt share is. That has essentially been the formula for them, which is, yeah, we don't mind giving up shots to the outside. And when we have the puck, we're going to generate offense in certain areas. One of the key things that has been the case is their right defensemen, Ryan Pulock, Scott Mayfield, and Jesse Boychuk are all players who have no problem shooting the puck at the right point. And what they're doing is these guys are taking shots, and then they have forwards either center or left wing kind of crack from there, and it's creating whether it's a bounce or a rebound or whatever. All of their offense, for the most part, starting from that right point, and it's created a lot of opportunities for them. The formula is simply get shots high danger areas of the ice, and we'll make sure the structure stays intact to get right. That's basically what happened for them.
And that's another place where Andrew Ladd can kind of work. You know, he's a guy who's used to standing in front of the net and used to kind of pouncing on rebounds. He is a trigger man. He's not like a real pass first kind of player, but. You know, if he's back and healthy, I mean, that's a place where I think this is a system where he can play pretty well in. I mean, we saw him play pretty well the 14 or whatever games he played earlier. It seemed like okay, but, I agree with Mike. Like, it is disappointing that we don't have any new players to talk about, but I do think that, you know, I saw somebody on Twitter before was like, man, Garth Snow would be like, hung out to dry or something. If he came out after a trade deadline, I was like, oh, we like the players that we have. Maybe we're just giving Lou a pass because he's the new guy and like we kind of, and they're playing very well this season. But I mean, is Ladd that kind of guy who can thrive in a system like that? Because, I mean, like Mike said, he's essentially missed the entire season. I mean, you know, they're 60 games in, and he's only played the first 15 or so. But I think he can thrive there, right? Or at least fit right in with what they've been doing this whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's that kind of player in terms of his style. I'm not sure if he's still the player that he was. But again, like, you have to look at things from a perspective of who he's going to be replacing. So, like, not like if he was coming in for Michael Dacol, I'm probably having a much different conversation with you than I am with him coming in for, right? Like, there is so much of it. I talked about the domino effect the other day during the Vancouver game. It was so obvious to me where when you get hemmed in on one shift, it kind of just starts the whole thing until there's a whistle where the other team kind of gets these like small patches of momentum. And what was happening with Barzal line is they were getting like hemmed. And next thing you knew, a couple of weeks later, you know, I don't think a penalty, this or the other. Andrew Ladd, like, presence on the ice will help to limit those hemmed in opportunities playing with a guy like Matt Barzal. Like, that's the key. You put him with a guy as creative and as dynamic and someone who can break the puck, and Ladd can look a lot more successful in that plus defensive structure.
But actually, I had totally forgotten about it. So Lamoriello said that they had no plans on bringing Dacol and or Hosang up again. Hosang is an interesting thing. I mean, he's been great in the last 2 weeks, and before that, not so much. Maybe he'll play with Ladd because he seemed to like it when Ladd was conditioning down in Bridgeport. But I feel like Lou might be kind of tempering things a little bit. I would expect, because Michael Dacol didn't really do anything wrong to get sent down. I think it was more of a numbers thing, and I think they want him to be eligible for the AHL playoffs. So I would think that he would get called up, maybe not necessarily Tuesday before the game against Calgary, but probably very soon. I mean, what did you see from him? Because the problem with Dacol is he didn't score that much, but he was definitely doing good things out there, especially on a line with Barzal, right? I mean, he's come a long way as a player.
Yeah, it's a case of a player whose reputation has kind of shifted, because he obviously was drafted super high, fifth overall, and there are a lot of high expectations for him. But fast forward a couple of years later, and he's kind of turned into this really strong defensive player who has really strong positioning skills. He has a big body. He's smart. And he knows how to move play forward, which is exactly the kind of guy that the Islanders have been looking for this year. So, yeah, he fit right in with Matthew Barzal for sure. But really, I thought he did his best work on a line with Valtteri Filppula and Leo Komarov. Mm-hmm. Both Filppula and Komarov were over 50% shot attempt share with Dacol this year, which is the only other player where that's been the case has been Josh Hosang. And I think that speaks to Dacol's ability to adapt within the system, but also use the tools that he has. Yeah, maybe he'll never be this dynamic 6-point guy, but certainly if he has the ability to drive play forward and play in the offensive zone, there's a role for that in the NHL. Maybe it's a fourth line role or a fringe third line role, but this is a guy who can definitely play in this league. At this point, I think he's shown that.
I didn't realize his numbers were that high with Komarov and Filppula.
I was going to say, go right ahead.
I was going to say, it's all defensive based. I mean, he's given up when he's on the ice. The Islanders basically don't give up shot attempts. It's crazy to the point where he's like literally skewed the things that I post, because his name is so high up above everyone else. He looks like
he's breaking shorts. That's funny. Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. They're just not giving anything up while he's on the ice. And that's something that as soon as he was taken out of the lineup, that shifted. Oh, wow. And it's been clear, like, to the point where if you look at the game where he was taken out to where they are now, it looks like a roller coaster or a slide where they just tumble down. So, again, I think it's just one of those things where you take out player X, player Y, and it's causing this domino effect through the whole team. It's kind of crazy to think one fringe third line player can have that impact. But I think that his removal from lineup has been problematic for them. In the sense of in-game momentum has been harder to come by because they're not in the offense.
I thought he made that line kind of entertaining in a funny way, Dacol, because it was like Carey was saying, like it's all defensive based. And I feel like watching Filppula and Komarov play with a guy who just knew where to be at the where he was supposed to be, because obviously that's why Val Filppula and Leo Komarov have jobs, is that they know where to be when they're supposed to be there. And it was like watching that line have someone like that was like, oh my God, this is actually working. And all of a sudden you're thinking back to when they signed Komarov and Filppula, you're like, what on earth are they doing? And you're like, holy, like it manifested itself for, you know, a stretch of games where Michael Dalcol being the key to that line was definitely probably the last thing I thought would happen this season. Even more, it's more surprising than where the Islanders are in the standings that Michael Dalcol, Val Filppula, and Leo Komarov were the best third line
ever.
That's harsh. Yeah, I think there's just something to be said for that, because when he was up last year, he barely looked like he belonged on the same ice as everyone else. And you know, Arthur Staple had a whole piece on how he worked really hard, and I think that's clear. His skating is at a different level than it was last time we saw him. But Mike's right, like his ability to play within Trotz's structure and make the most of that while bringing up other players is something that really should not be lost on Lamoriello and the staff.
They went from that to removing him from the team completely. That's a shit that I guess it didn't really compute with me. It's like, oh, you can play on the first line, but now you're just going to be in the minor leagues.
True Islanders thing is to bring a guy from the minors and put him immediately on the first line. That's the thing we've seen many, many times. It almost never works, but this one works. So, well, I mean, that's a pretty good case for bringing up Michael Dalcol, and maybe he ends up being a bigger trade deadline acquisition than either Ladd or Hickey or Dennis Seidenberg, who resurrected himself this weekend with a prorated contract. We don't think he's actually going to play, right? Like, that would be really, really, that would be crazy.
So, yeah. This will probably come back to bite me, but I don't think he's going to play.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
He's going to stick up for the record. I don't think he's going to play.
Yeah, I joked with Dan yesterday. I said that if Dennis Seidenberg plays, that means we've already gone through Lucas Spezza. So let's hope that means that Dennis Seidenberg isn't going to play.
Yeah.
I have thought it was funny. Like the island, I really don't think other teams do this, because I follow enough other beat writers that I would see their line rushes in morning skate and pregame where like Dennis Seidenberg, Andrew Gross, there you go. He's got Dennis Seidenberg listed on the morning skate line rushes, and it says like PTO next to his name. And I haven't seen that with any other team, but the Islanders just do it all the time. Because, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Miro Chetan or Radek Martinek's name pops up on one of those things every now and then. They just have these guys that just hang around and skate with them. It's so funny.
Yeah, they're a very generous organization. Well, they have the suite, too, that the alumni can use all the time. So they're a very generous organization with that kind of stuff. So this has been great. This has been illuminating. We really appreciate it. I am going to put you on the spot, though, Carey, because I'm going to ask you one final question. It's okay to say what comes to your mind. This is Islanders anxiety, after all, so we are nothing if not anxious all the time. But given the events of today, both with the Islanders non-events and events for their Metro Division rivals, right now, would you say that the Islanders actually win the Metro Division this year?
I'm going to say...
It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to say yes. They will, because I do think they're a better team than Washington. And I think that the difference in points between them and Columbus is too much to catch up on in 20 games. However, if Columbus is the team that gets super hot, they will be the ones to win the division. I don't think it's Washington. I think it will be the Islanders or Columbus.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Can I ask a follow up?
Yes.
I think Dan and I probably all three of us probably have the same answer, but right now, if the playoffs started today and the Islanders got to pick their opponent, obviously it had to be in the Metro kind of bracket or the Canadians. Who would it be?
Washington.
To pick, I would say either Washington or Pittsburgh. And I know that's crazy, but I think the Islanders can beat Pittsburgh. Yeah.
I thought all three of us would say Washington, but yeah, it's Pittsburgh and Washington, man. It's so, what a weird world we're living in.
I don't want any part of that Carolina Hurricanes team, boy. I do not. I absolutely do not.
No, even before like they acquired Niederreiter, they looked fantastic against the Islanders because they just played a style that is really, I think, contradictive to what the Islanders do.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're fast. They break in with possession. They take a lot of shots, obviously. I mean, that's the one thing would be if Carolina gets like goes through another one of those cold streaks, they're quite beatable, right? But you can't really bank on that happening. So their ability to do things that the Islanders can't is would be a little bit concerning. But I agree. Washington and Pittsburgh are probably the two weakest teams up within the playoff sphere at this point, which is kind of mind-boggling after a decade and basically year in and year out.
Yeah, yeah. But and it's mind-boggling that that's true, and it's mind-boggling that we all sat here and said that. Like, and that's, I don't know, it's just crazy.
With conviction, like people believe it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And I could hear, I could visualize people with their headphones on the bus or at their offices or wherever, nodding in agreement. Like, yeah, that is weird. But anyway, no, thank you, Carrie. This has been awesome. I'm sorry it took so long to make this happen. But as always, you deliver. This has been so great. Really appreciate it.
Thank you guys very much for having me.
No problem. Everybody should check out. Well, they should. If you're on Twitter, you should already be subscribed to Carrie. It's Habermetrics on Twitter. You need to follow these charts every single day, and you need to read them. And if you have a question about it, and you're very nice, you should reach out to Carrie and ask him because he is very good at answering questions. Because sometimes this stuff is kind of tricky. So definitely reach out to him and ask him if the things don't make sense. But one of the great things about a lot of hockey stats people, and we have three of them on staff at Lighthouse Hockey between Travis, yourself, and Garrick, is that, you know, you got to put these things into context and you got to put it into English so people can understand it. And you're very good at that. So I really appreciate it. So Habermetrics on Twitter, you should follow him there. You should also check out his website, The Cap Space, which has tons and tons and tons of great information. Just real quickly, could you summarize that for everybody who hasn't seen it yet?
Yeah, so kind of relaunched this month, added a couple of quick dashboards for everyone to use, just kind of basic stuff for now, but there's actually going to be some new stuff coming out this week that I'm pretty excited about, so check that out. It's thecapspace.com, and yeah, I'm adding to it, you know, every week, every 2 weeks, so please check it out.
Yeah, there's time on ice charts and like you know, just points per game chart, all that kind of great stuff, right? And then you have something cooking at Lighthouse Hockey this week, right? Is it a Del Col thing? Am I wrong, or do we wanna?
Yeah, so the plan was to go for the trade deadline recap, which is still going to be the plan, but it's going to be a little bit different than I had originally anticipated, wherein I don't have to do any research on a new player, but. We're going to talk about, or I'm going to talk about really where the team is right now, what they can do to improve, and the fact that there are some internal improvements that can be made that are potentially better and obviously at least less costly in assets than what some of their potential opponents have done. So check that out. It should be coming out Wednesday. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
No, that'd be awesome. We're looking forward to that. So thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, later. So the Islanders have kind of a big game coming up on Thursday night. It is the Toronto Maple Leafs coming into Nassau Coliseum for the first time this season, and that means that John Tavares is coming back to Nassau Coliseum for the first time as a non-member of the Islanders. It feels like we've been talking about this game forever, and you know, I would like to say we're not going to reiterate ourselves, but I'm sure we are at some point because you and I have both gone back and listened to our July 1st episode. And I guess I'm kind of curious. I have a feeling I know what the answer is going to be, but like having heard us again and having gone back and listened to us again, has your stance on his departure or anything changed at all since that time?
Nope. Not at all.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
the only thing that's changed, obviously, has been that we, like I said to you in a text message when I was listening to it, that it's now a fun listen, which is something I never thought would ever happen to that episode. Or, you know, and I honestly, I don't know if this is an indictment on myself or anything, but I don't think I probably listened to our shows. I don't listen to every one of them back. Sometimes you just like hear yourself. It's weird, whatever. But that one I listened to now a couple times since I even spoke to you. Just like I have it on to think about it and just that we're now at this point. And it's fun. It's something I enjoy doing. It feels good to listen to that episode.
I had forgotten your voice was very emotional. Like, I feel like, you know, I was trying to be a little bit detached and also kind of keep track of everything. Also, I find out later that my capture was completely fried. I still have no idea what happened there, which really sucks because that's like the episode that most people have listened to. But going back and listening to it I haven't listened to it since we recorded it. And you were very emotional in that. And I find that's why I thought to myself, like, it's weird to still be kind of emotional about this, you know, almost months later. But yeah, I was taken aback by that. The other thing I was taken aback by was, and I'm going to put the clip right in here, that the one of the things we talked about was the whole process of the free agency thing and how, like, I had totally forgotten that the Stars and Sharks were kind of left on the hook too, while we all didn't know what Tavares was going to do. Let me play that clip right here, and you'll all know what we're talking about.
But, you know, him leaving is one thing, but, like, to do it in such a way that it leaves the team in a serious lurch, which is the way to Staple put it, you know, they're screwed. Like, you know, he did this on the morning of free agency. So, like, free agents are going left and right, and, you know, are any of them really all-star players? No, not really. I mean, they kept Thomas Hickey, so that's good. But, you know, this is going to put a serious damper on whatever plans the Islanders had, and they're going to have to go out and make trades now. They're not going to get what they need from free agency anyway this year because the best free agent available was John Tavares. So, you know, this is really putting this franchise in a bind, and I don't think people realize it because, like you said, we're the Islanders and nobody really cares, but, like, he's been saying for the entire time, the run-up to this entire period, that he loves playing here and he wanted to be here and you know, he wanted to make it work and he loves it, and then to just leave his team in the worst possible spot to go to another team, it doesn't really betray that love, right? I mean, that's a little bit crazy.
No, it is, and, like, he could have gone about this in 100,000 different ways, and this is the only way he could have left this way, like, with turned complete heel.
The worst possible way to leave.
Yeah. It was honestly bizarre. Yeah. Yesterday, I spent my entire day in bed, and I'm sure a lot of people did the same thing, just refreshing Twitter. It was a beautiful day. I mean, it's hot, but, like, I should have been outside. But I was just waiting for this guy to do something, and he didn't do anything, and he didn't give any inkling to anybody. Like, right. The Dallas Stars were still in the run-up until, you know.
Yeah, the Sharks apparently were there too, and, like, you know, what have they been saying? I mean, they've been making moves too, but, like, all of them have been sitting on this, you know?
Yeah, and he screwed everybody. He screwed everybody, and he did it in such a way that was so John Tavares, like, yeah. Who I guess he's not, like, you know, what we thought he was, I guess. Where he was, like, supposed to be this, you know, lead by example kind of guy, and it's wrong. Like, it's, yeah. I'm genuinely disturbed by it. Yeah. I hope he never wins a Stanley Cup with the goddamn Maple Leafs. Yeah. Like, he's turned the Maple Leafs into this, like, horrible horror show. Like, I'm like thinking, I was texting my friend, like, I might hate them more than I hate the Rangers right now.
I had totally forgotten that they were on the hook too, and it made me laugh because I remember back at the All-Star game in San Jose, Sharks fans were booing Tavares, and he even seemed kind of confused as to why that was, and it's like, well, dude, they were waiting for your answer too. It's not as bad as the booing you're going to get from the Islanders fans, but I did find that funny. I was like, I totally forgot about that. Jeez.
It's funny that he's now become a I want to call him a league-wide villain. I think more people don't like him than do like him in the league from a fan base. And then obviously most of the players, if Rob Schrempf is any indication, most of the players. Are like, that was funny. I mean, I think that day or that, you know, 36-hour period, whatever it was, that was what I thought I was going to be the most upset about was – the lack of like forthrightness from him and the silence, the radio silence that took place, you know, for that, you know, 48 hour, whatever the stretch was, basically since those meetings, he started taking meetings like with other teams. It's like, there was nothing, there was no sense of like that he kind of could commiserate with, like, knew that Islander fans were literally sitting and waiting on every like second of this. There was none of that. There was you didn't get a sense that he had any like remorse. I don't know if remorse, empathy is the right word. Empathy, yeah. For Islander fans who were literally on the other side of the curtain and couldn't see or hear what was going on. All we knew was, oh, here comes Evander Kane into the Sharks meeting and Patrice Bergeron, and they're only getting a phone meeting, a Skype meeting with the Vegas Golden Knights, whatever. And then we knew like Trotz and Lamoriello showed up, and we knew about the video. But like other than that, like there was nothing else like coming out. And
I feel like that, he still doesn't know about that. He still doesn't understand. Because again, getting back to the Sharks thing, like he still doesn't understand the sort of ramifications on us from that period.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that was scarring. It was a scarring, you know, as a sports fan. And that's why, like, I think as an Islander fan, like you have earned every right to show how you feel on Thursday night. And that's not just like Tavares. Sure. Like that is definitely number one on the list right now. But, you know, we've put up with so much for so long and we talk about it all the time. We can go through the entire list and you have every right. You've earned every right by sticking through it to show exactly to show the league, to show the media, especially the media in Canada and like the bigwigs in the media who put us through just as much kind of torture as he did. Like you have earned the right to show him, show them, him, everybody, how you feel. And, you know, nobody, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise either. And don't let anybody tell you how to act or how you should feel. You know, obviously you want to show some dignity and keep your dignity as fan base, but, right. But like nobody else can tell you how to feel on Thursday night when it finally comes to a crescendo.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you basically took the words right out of my mouth. And it's creepy because I'm looking at my notes here and it's almost like you read them, but they just literally came from my phone to my email. So I'm reading them now. But no, you're 100% right. You know, there's going to be obviously tons of booing and obviously they're going to be focused on Tavares. But yeah, no, I think whether people want to admit it or not, and I think they would if they thought about it, we would kind of be booing the whole 2-year process of this whole thing that went down.
Right.
You know, I mean, for 2 years, everybody and their grandmother across the hockey world basically laid out all of the reasons why John Tavares needs to leave the Islanders. And the only thing that Islanders fans had to keep our spirits up, because the team wasn't very good, the only thing we had to hold on to that whole time was John Tavares himself telling us, I want to play here. I want to win here. I want to stay here. This is my home. These people have embraced me. I want to be a one uniform guy. You know, when they announced the Coliseum thing, he was there. He was smiling ear to ear. Like John Tavares isn't a good enough actor to fake being happy about playing at Nassau Coliseum again. This guy is not, you know, he's not Christian Bale. Like he doesn't get into a character or something. Like he just is. That's not him. He was happy to be there. And I believe he was sincere in wanting to stay because he's not built that way to like fake it and to lie. And we had that even again, another funny thing from that episode that I went back and listened to was, him calling, I totally forgot that he had called draft picks that year and congratulated them and welcomed them to the Islanders. And then
yes,
a week later he walked away. So here we are 2 years, everybody's telling us you suck and you need to lose your best player. And the guy himself is saying, no, I want to stay. I want to win here. This is my team. And then in the span of a week, he leaves. And that hurts. Like, it's like you're going out with somebody for years. They tell you they love you. Then they go silent. And then you, the next day, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm married to this guy now. Like what? How does that work? And it's traumatic. And you know, the booing of Tavares is going to be the booing of all these people. And so Darren Dreger comes out and he's like, of course he says this on Leafs Lunch, cause I'm sure he assumes that no Americans listen to it, but he's like, you know, who cares what the fans think? John Tavares did his time and he doesn't have to, you know, care what the fans think. Well, Darren, that's kind of a, you know, you should care what the fans think because the fans are kind of how you have a job. You know, if there weren't fans, we wouldn't need Darren Dreger. And so that's just kind of indicative of what I'm afraid of, which is going to be the backlash to the backlash. Like, we know what the Tavares backlash is going to be. I mean, we're all Islanders fans. Like, we all know what's going to happen. But I'm afraid of the backlash to the backlash. And I know I shouldn't be, but I'm already kind of like, you know, afraid of it, right? Like you're kind of like anticipating what's going to happen afterwards. So,
yeah, I think I've definitely given it some thought. I think the Dreger, like I would love for just to hold up a big sign and say like, you know, like Darren Dreger, like Pierre LeBrun, like all those guys be like, you know, fuck you too. You know, like just like basically like all these guys, like it's not just, and I think that's kind of the point that those guys have all been missing this whole time.
Right.
It's like, no. This isn't just about John. Like, you literally made this guy into what he is since he was 14. Like, this is about you guys too, and this is about the way you treat people who you guys are like these gatekeepers who you don't deem like worthy enough to have a great franchise or whatever. Like, this is about you guys and the way you treat people. And so I like, sure, like John, I think, sorry, Darren Drager and those guys on Friday morning, first of all, they all already have exactly what they're going to be writing already. Right. Like, oh, yeah. if you don't think that Elliot Friedman and Darren Drager have already thought this entire think piece through and can't wait to use whatever lead they already have stored in their cupboard, like, you're missing the point. Like, they cannot wait to put out their column of how Islander fans showed the world they don't deserve John Tavares.
I'm sure LeBrun's article is already in the Athletic queue, ready to go. That, you know. This is we don't know. Why are they booing the guy who represented them so well for 9 years? They're just so angry. I don't get it. It's like, Pierre, we hung on every word you said for 2 years, and every word out of John Tavares' mouth was he wanted to stay, and then he left. Like, that's the thing I don't get. Like, these guys were reporting him saying he wanted to stay, and all of a sudden they forgot that? Like, it's just so weird. And I think that's why there's going to be a million chants there, obviously, but I think, you know, traitor is going to be one that ends up, not that I'm advocating this, but I feel like that's a word you're going to hear a lot. And I think that's what it comes down to. Like, this guy professed his love for us for so long and then he just left. And it's like, how does that work out? You know, like, what, how does one lead to the other? How is this your home and the place you want to play? I mean, for God's sakes, the owners organized a golf tournament of Islanders captains. There was only the one time they did it. And it was just so John Tavares can play golf with Dennis Potvin and Michael Pekka and Mark Streit and all these other guys. And then he just left. And it's like, you know, this was supposed to be his place. And then he just decided, nah, I'm all right. I'm leaving. And he just left. So.
Yep. Yeah, it was tone deaf. And another thing, too, was like, we spoke about that we spoke that day about how John Tavares is very connected to the union. And I mean, before he left, I always kind of half-heartedly joke, and this was just like honestly a half joke, that, you know, he should just be the player coach, because that's how kind of detail oriented and how much, like, you know, upset, how hockey obsessed he came off of. So he wasn't naive to the fact that this, what he was doing, was a crushing blow to not just Islander fans and our psyche and the way we feel, but also to the organization and as a whole. And like, he's not an idiot, so he knew how the league perceived the New York Islander fan base. And the only people who really know that on the inside are if you have basically played for the Islanders, if you've coached the Islanders, or if you've been like a beat writer, and then obviously Islander fans.
Yeah.
So like, John Tavares knew, like, he saw the other side. He said he saw how we were treated. He saw the franchise we treated. He saw what it was like to not know where you were going to play your games. And like, the next year, you didn't know if, you know, this team might be in Kansas City in a couple of years. Like, he knew all about all this stuff.
Absolutely.
And he then now lended another body blow, like a straight liver shot to this already wounded animal. And then did the one thing he couldn't do and show zero. He was so tone deaf. I mean, the thing with that thing, it's become like almost a parody of itself. But the fact that he called Matt Barzal the kid who won the Calder, and it just like, he literally couldn't think of the guy's name. The best player on his team, most talented player on the team, he couldn't think of his name because of what, God knows why. I don't know if he didn't want to say it or whatever, but that is like the literally, and that doesn't ever get brought up by the hockey media. Like, wow, like, don't you think that was a little weird that John Tavares did that? Yeah. No, that, of course that didn't come up. That whole press conference, all they talked about was how happy he was with his little Maple Leafs pin on his lapel with Kyle Dubas and like how great they look together and the video and whatever. And none of that is ever brought up. No. But that's how tone deaf the guy was, that he literally couldn't say Matt Barzal's name on podium.
I just want to have an aside that I love that it's this, that signing has created an entire like meme industrial complex of everybody. Now, anytime anybody gets traded, immediately their head is photoshopped onto a kid on a bed of a team with a team's bed sheets. So I saw like a Matt Duchene on Blue Jackets bed sheets. I saw Matt Zuccarello on Stars bed sheets. And it's funny. Like, I could laugh at it. It's funny, but it's just like, it became so ridiculous. And but it is tone deaf. And I agree with you again, 100%. Like, this was a guy who, you know, over the years, we heard stories of people going up to him just on the street and, you know, a restaurant or whatever and saying, hey, man, you got to beat the Rangers. Like, you got to do this. You got to, like, he knew. And that's the thing. Like, you know, I know people out there, especially Islanders fans, like, all of a sudden they kind of want to, like, there's a lot of revisionist history. Like, he wasn't that good to begin with. And he was, you know, he was trying to get to the Leafs the whole time. I don't know if I necessarily buy that, but he knew. Like, he got it. And he got why we are the way we are and the way the fans. And I think what's funny, if you know, when this is all said and done and he's retired and he's like 50 years old and he, you know, probably has a ghostwriter write his autobiography, I think he'll admit that when he came to the Islanders, he didn't know anything about them, because why would anybody from outside of this team know anything about them? And he became an Islander for 9 years. He was the guy. And I do think, again, I think that part is genuine, because I don't think he has it in him to put up a front and pretend like he'd be somebody else. And the fact that he got us and then still left is just like, yeah, it's a knife in the back, you know, and it hurts. It hurts when somebody you connect with that closely decides to leave. And I don't know if anybody's really going to understand. He definitely understands it. I know for a fact that, like, outside of us, nobody else is rooting for the Islanders this year. I mean, the fact that they're good kind of lends a really weird twist to the story. nobody thought they were going to be this good this year. And we'll get to why they are in a second when we close up this whole segment. But I know that, like, there's very few people out there that are rooting for us. Like, the Hurricanes have been on this crazy run, and it feels like the entire world is rooting for them to make the playoffs. There's a good chance they play the Islanders in the first round. People are going to be rooting for them against the Islanders. Nobody's rooting for us outside of us. Like, we're it. And like I said, yep, at the end of that episode, that July 1st episode, like, we have each other. And as Islanders fans, we don't always get along. We don't always see eye to eye on every topic. But we have each other. And you're not alone out there. Like, if you're an Islanders fan, so are we. So it's a lot of people. And we're rooting for this team. And we're having fun so far. But, you know, after that game, don't really go looking. Like Mike said, you got to do what you got to do. And you have to let them know. The other thing, too, is that this is the first time we get to do this. This is the first game. So everybody's going to be watching. He's going to be paying attention. They play again on April 1st. I have a feeling the tension's going to be a little bit more muted. Once we get into next season, we're going to be into, you know, you got to move on with your life mode. Like, that's, you know, we can't keep doing right. This forever. Like, this is the time to let the guy know, to say what you got to say. And if that means applauding the guy for 9 years of great service, then do that too. Like, don't let anybody browbeat you or strong arm you into booing a guy you don't feel like booing. That's totally fine. But, you know, at the end of the game, don't go looking for, like, sympathy from anybody or like, wow, these Islander fans seem really hurt by this. I feel bad for them. Nobody's going to say that. There's going to be nobody out there. I guarantee you, like you just said, these people already have their stuff written. Pierre LeBrun's article has already been written. I guarantee there's going to be an article on Deadspin saying Islanders idiots boo John Tavares and make him sad. Like, that's it. Or, you know, he doesn't care or whatever happens. And I guarantee on Saturday night, and I've been working on this now for a while now, Coach's Corner, there's Don Cherry. He's going to say, now listen, look, listen, I got to say something right now. Look, these people, these Islanders fans booing, listen, Johnny Tavares is a good Toronto boy. He wanted to play for Toronto, and they don't like it because he left. They're going to have to shut up and get over it. You know, a guy who hasn't been over Europeans playing in the NHL now for 30 years. So I'm just saying, we have each other. That part of that episode still stands, and we have to look out for each other and be together and let this guy know what he did to us. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like the most powerful part of being, you know, a sports fan, right? Is like, this, don't take what's going on for granted. I'm telling you right now, sure. Like, nobody, we wouldn't wish, you know, the way we felt on July 1st on our worst enemies or whatever. Maybe the people in Toronto, but that's about it.
I've reached out to some Senators fans about what's going on up there. And I'm like, hey man, I really, really hope that, like, there are better days for you. Because I know what you're going through. It's terrible.
Exactly. Like, I mean, just think about, like, what they've gone through too, like with Carlson and like that weird saga, like, and then he gets traded. It's just, but like, I'm telling you, on Thursday night, the whole league is going to be watching. The sports world is going to be watching. Like you said, Deadspin's going to write something, you know, snarky and annoying. And then, but nobody would like, don't take what you're feeling for granted. Like, any sports fan would trade what they're doing on Thursday night for the way you're feeling. Like, you, that is the whole point, is to be full of emotion and then to be able to actually let it out. And you, Islander fans got a very rare opportunity to do it. And, you know, so that's why, like, that's why I was saying, like, you know, you do exactly what you need to, whatever you have to do on Thursday night, wherever you are, you just do it. Hmm. And you make sure that you get whatever you need to off your chest on Thursday, because then we got a playoff stretch to worry about.
Yeah.
You know, keep, obviously, like, you know, look out for one another and don't get in trouble, but do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Is there something, we're recording this on Sunday. Figured we could just sit back and talk about it, you know, a little, get it kind of out of the way. But the game is, you know, Thursday. Just in the event, I don't think anything's going to happen, but just in case it does, like, is there something that Tavares could do or say that might, like, change your mind, you know, and kind of, like, make you think about it a different way? I don't know. I mean, he's not going to say anything, so don't worry about it. But I'm just saying.
No, I still don't think so. I mean, I was kind of thinking, like, something similar. Like, first of all, they're going to show a tribute video. Like,
oh,
I don't,
for sure,
I,
yeah.
Which we knew. I think then, like, someone just confirmed it last week. But, I think that is actually more on the Islanders kind of even, like, stoking the flames a little bit more. Because I think, you know, they know exactly what the reaction to that is going to be. But I don't, like, so I was thinking, like, if like, John Tavares, like, shot, like, his own little tribute video or whatever and, like, released it, trying to strategic, I'm sure he's got a great PR firm now, and they probably are advising him to do it, to, like, either write another Tribune, Flyers Tribune article or something. I just would say no, because at this point I wouldn't trust it to be genuine at all. And it would make me even more mad.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I could see him doing a thing. I mean, he still knows Arthur Staple. Obviously, I could see kind of like an Athletic article coming out or something like that. But yeah, I mean, he's talked about it the whole time, and at no point did I ever think it was genuine. And he just keeps coming off as being sort of tone deaf to the whole situation. I was heartened a little bit though to when I read an article prior to Matt Duchene being traded to the Blue Jackets by Don Brennan of the Ottawa Sun, who's kind of got Senators fans, I think, have a bit of a love-hate relationship with him. He's a little bit like kind of a Larry Brooks type up there. But he was talking about how the Senators were kind of stuck in a holding pattern without knowing what to do. They kind of waited too long to take care of Duchene and Ryan Dzingel and Mark Stone. And Duchene's agent is Pat Brisson, who's Tavares' agent. And I found it funny that Brennan wrote that Brisson is having Duchene do what John Tavares did with the Islanders, which is take them for a long walk and basically kind of like string them along while this guy just kind of does whatever he wants to do. And it made me feel that there is a tiny bit of sympathy out there for us, you know, that somebody else saw what happened and was like, that's not cool, man. Like, you know, you gotta let this team do what is best for them. And if that means trading you for picks and prospects, then hey, that's what you gotta do. But yeah, the Islanders didn't do that. So.
I would love to sit down and have a beer with a Montreal Canadiens fan. I mean, a Senators fan maybe, but like a Canadiens fan who like truly like the worst thing that could ever happen to them would be the Toronto Maple Leafs to end their Stanley Cup drought, right? And I would just love to be like, you know, what did the Tavares scenario just look like to you from your like? I wouldn't even say it, just be like, just try to like go from start to finish, John Tavares as a New York Islander to July 1st. And I would love to hear like that because we are just so inundated with like the other side, and like, just to hear that coming from a Senators writer, I'm like, yeah, you know, that is it does make you feel a little bit better. I honestly think outside of Islander fans, the people that have kind of sympathized the most with me have been my friends who are Ranger fans.
Yeah,
because
so.
they obviously have seen a closer look at this than you know the rest of the hockey world. So,
yeah, and that's what makes Islanders Rangers rivalry so unique and so fierce is that it's your friends, it's your cousins, it's your parents, it's your family members, like, you know, it's your coworkers. Like there's that you're, everybody's ingratiated right next to each other. And so, yeah, I think this kind of thing, you know, if you're, unless the truly meatheaded out there, you know, aside from those people, I think if you're a Rangers fan with a thinking brain, you know, you see your cousin or your father or your mother or your sister or your friend bummed out because this dude left, you kind of forget that you're a Ranger fan. You're like, oh man, I'm sorry this happened to you. That really sucks. So I believe you. That's kind of funny, but
yeah. It's just like the attention to detail is just a lot more, you know, because they're like naturally closer. And it's fun. I mean, I think there's like it's the whole situation coming to a head. I've been looking forward to it. Obviously, this is a big week, just in general, for the franchise, and like just to have something like this to look forward to all season has been nice. And I think the Islanders, I know like they're kind of director of communications and stuff. They've been close with Tavares, so I don't think that there's going to be anything, from them to like I said, the tribute video or whatever. Like I think that is actually stoking the flame a little bit, but they have to do it.
Yeah, there's no way.
And I would love to hear like Paul Cartier like play since you've been gone on the organ, like stuff like that. I would love for them to not forget that this guy walked out on them too. Like, you know, that he was a big part of what they did. If the Islanders suck this year, like because John Tavares left, that affects their bottom line. Like it makes their life a little more difficult. So I hope that they do some kind of like tongue in cheek stuff to kind of just, you know, remind him like that this was like a far reaching decision he made, and he made it in the wrong way.
that's a perfect way to close this up, because you know there has been a weird year for the Islanders in that they've been way better than you thought, and the reason that is because of Barry Trotz. And if you haven't read the recap from the game they played in Vancouver in the province, you should, because there's a line there that, you know, I have a spreadsheet here of the Tao of Trotz and all these great, you know, lines he's had all season, but there is one that I think encapsulates this more than any, and I'm not sure what the question was. I'm sure it had to do with Tavares, but Trotz basically said, I mean, and again, this to me is what this whole season has been about. He said, there's more to the Islanders than just one man. And I mean, you can't put it better than that. He has taught us that lesson all season long. There's more to this team than just one man. And you know, that's how it is. And that's how they've been able to resurrect themselves in the face of what was a really traumatic summer. Let's put it that way. So yeah. So we'll have to see what happens. And I mean, number one thing is they need a win. So let's get that out of the way first. And then hopefully the other stuff is comes right behind it, and the 2 points are in the pocket.
Yeah, and I can't wait. I'm really excited to be in Nassau Coliseum for a game like this. I think this is kind of, you know, why what the Coliseum is all about. No arena in sports does a big game like the Coliseum, or does a game that, you know, means a lot like the Coliseum, and it's going to be great. I think, you know, I've spoken about, this is one of my favorite games that I've ever been at, even though they lost. Like, just looking back on, was that Sabres game where beer bottles were thrown on the ice. And I just like imagine like just like that raw emotion, that anger towards the league for botching up a big call or whatever, like that. That's what's going to be in, like kind of whizzing around the upper bowl of the Coliseum. And it's a fun environment to be in for a game like this. And I just can't wait. I can't wait just to see Islander fans like doing this all together, like united, just to like show the world or the league or whatever, John Tavares, like how they feel. I'm super excited.
So before the Islanders play that big game against the Maple Leafs, they have an arguably as big game against another Canadian team, the Calgary Flames, who kind of walloped the Islanders a little bit last week in Calgary. They come into the Coliseum. They were already there today skating, practicing, as I saw on TSN Trade Center today, which was a waste of my entire damn day. The Flames are very good. They're much like Kerry said about the Hurricanes, like they're a team that plays with a lot of speed. And boy, they just gave the Islanders all kinds of problems. And that 5-2 loss sounds a lot better than it actually was to watch. It was infuriating to watch, to be perfectly blunt. The Islanders really need to, I don't want to make it a must-win game, because, you know, there are some other games left on the schedule, but this is not a game they definitely want to lose, especially in light of the fact that the Leafs are coming in the next day.
Yeah, they, it's a big game for a couple of reasons. It's more of a big game on this side of the curtain where you're watching, and we'll be able to kind of see what level, you know, Andrew Ladd and to a lesser extent Thomas Hickey are able to play at, which gives the game some serious weight, and to see how they fit into this lineup that they haven't been involved in. Hickey, what, since mid-December, Ladd since, Ladd got hurt in like early November.
Early November, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's been a long time for the two of them, and Hickey is interesting. I mean, I think the world of Thomas Hickey as an Islander, and you know, as a player. I mean, sure, he's not a world beater, but he's just been so good and so solid in his role. But when he came out of the lineup, that meant Devon Toews has come in the lineup, and that's really when the Islanders really started to hit their stride. And so, I mean, he's got some catching up to do. I don't doubt that he'll be able to do it. So that's kind of how I'm approaching that game, rather than, you know, we need to get these 2 points. I'm looking at it. I mean, they do need to get them because, like you said, there are two huge games coming to at the end of the week. So you want to have those 2 points in the pocket already. But I'm looking at it from that way. Like, I'm just hoping to see some encouraging signs from those two players in particular before the Leafs come in.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to look at it, because I really don't know if they have the lineup to beat the Flames, which is really, I'm kind of going into it. I know they've performed a lot of miracles this year, but after that game last week, they were outshot by a million miles. They were lucky to be tied early in the third, and then the Flames scored 2 goals in 29 seconds, and it was essentially over. Like, there was nothing left in that game. So hopefully there's not a repeat of that, but you never know. I mean, teams come out here and weird stuff happens. So hopefully they can get the 2 points, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it would be interesting to see Ladd in particular, but I'm less worried about Hickey, cause I feel like he's already been pretty familiar with the guys he's been playing with. But, Ladd, yeah, he's been out for quite a long time, so he needs to get in there. The next game would be Thursday against the Leafs. And we've been so focused on that Leafs game that I totally forgot that the next day they play the Capitals. Like, I totally focused on this Leafs game that I completely forgot the Capitals are coming in. All these games are at Nassau Coliseum, by the way, which is great. It gives the Islanders a little bit of a bump, but the Caps are coming in. Like you said before, they picked up Nick Jensen and Carl Hagelin, two depth options for them. That's what they kind of do. When we say the Capitals are a team that the Islanders can beat, it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. They still are the Capitals. But I think they match up pretty well with them. Speed isn't a huge discrepancy. They can, obviously they have their old coach, and so they can kind of, use some insider information or whatever. But that game, again, is as big, if not bigger, than the game against the Leafs, because that is the team that is directly chasing you in the Metro. And that's kind of a huge one. And I feel stupid for having forgotten about it, but it's that turn of the calendar. You don't even bother to look, and all of a sudden you're like, holy cow, really? That's where they got to play them? But, I think they have a chance, and they've been good on back-to-backs, as we've seen. So that's a good one to get some points in, but that's huge. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they were looking more forward to that one than the Leafs game.
Yeah, I think we talked a lot about how back in the day after the Rangers game, they always would just lose to whoever they played afterwards, the Senators or whatever. Yep. So there's no opportunity for that, at least in this game. Like, you lose, if the Leafs win, they better be up for the next game, and they'll have no choice, because like, it could be, that could be the end of the Islanders' reign at the top of the division if they screw up that game. So, it's just like a crazy week. I think just starting today with the deadline, and then, obviously the Ladd and Hickey returning, then the Leafs game, then the divisional showdown, and then I can't even remember who they played to close the weekend out.
The Flyers.
Flyers, right. So
they play the Flyers on Sunday in a matinee, and then on Tuesday, look way forward, they play the Ottawa Senators, who are literally stripped down to the studs. Like, they just, there's nobody left on the Senators anymore. They just traded everybody. Mark Stone is now a Vegas Golden Knight, and everybody else plays for the Blue Jackets. So, yeah, it's a huge week. Those are two winnable games at the end of the week, but after the huge highs of the games in the earlier of the week, you hope that there's not a letdown, like you said, like they used to have against games after the Rangers.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not going to be easy at all. And I just hope that they come out of it, in exactly the same position as they're in, because you now know that like the Hurricanes and the Blue Jackets are going to be charging up the division. The Capitals aren't going to be going away, and the Penguins, like, whatever, we can say that they're not what they were last year, the year before that, whatever, going all the way back till basically Crosby's second year in the league, but they're still the Penguins, so they're good. Like, the Islanders can get sucked into a real dogfight for not just the division, but for home ice, and then for to avoid the Lightning in the first round, and obviously you don't want to say it, but like a playoff spot as well. So not punting on this week or not screwing this week up will go a long way in kind of restoring the faith that we had before the Western Canada trip.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. Real quick, just because we didn't get to before, just to recap the last couple of games over the Western Canada swing. So, yeah, they lost. Oh, excuse me. They lost 4-2 to Calgary. I thought it was 5-2. They felt like 5-2. But
yeah, it felt like 8-2. It wasn't close.
So that was bad. Well, I've been mad bad that whole time, but that game doesn't deserve me getting it right anyway. They followed that up with a 4-3 overtime loss to Edmonton. They really, again, weren't playing very well. They started the game down 2-0. They stormed all the way back to make it 3-2. The Oscar Klefbom tied it with a couple of minutes ago, and then Connor McDavid won it in overtime. And there's a good argument that Connor McDavid shouldn't have been in the game because he hit Nick Leddy. He was given a 2-minute penalty. The Islanders scored on it, which is great, but McDavid was then given a 2-game suspension. And it's like, well, why wasn't he given 5 in a game if it was that bad at the time? But, you know, to be honest, the Islanders were sloppy the entire game. They were defending way too much and, quite frankly, probably barely deserved 1 point in that game that they got, let alone 2. So I think it probably ended up the way it should have. But then the Islanders came back in a big way in the next game, a 4-0 win in Vancouver, which was now, as we know, Eric Gudbranson's final game as a Vancouver Canuck. I highly recommend you seek out Canucks fans because they are throwing a party. They have not partied like this since 1994's Western Conference Final. Like, this is, you know, they are happy as hell that this guy is gone, which makes us, as people in the division with the Pittsburgh Penguins, where he got traded, very, very happy. But the game against the Canucks was good. It wasn't a perfect game, but the Islanders looked more like the Islanders in that game.
Yeah, I should have actually brought this up when Carrier was on, but one of the intermission interviews was with Val Filppula, and the Islanders didn't really play well in the first like 35, 40 minutes of that game. And he was talking about how Shannon Hogan, I think, basically said that. And he's like, yeah, but you know, most of their shots were from far away, so we're doing a good job. Hmm. And I was like, yeah, wow. It's just, you know, even like hearing him picking up like the intricacies of Trotz way is pretty right. funny. But, yeah, he looked great. He looked handsome. Tom Kunacko, by the way, is also handsome. I didn't realize that.
I don't know if I think I missed that interview she did with him. But they looked. It's always fun to see Filppula kind of in the interview slot because it seems like there's a rotating cast of guys. It's always Cizikas, Nelson, Clutterbuck, and then a couple other guys in there. I guess
Bailey. I think I've probably seen 800. Intermission interviews with Josh Bailey in my lifetime.
And he's never said anything interesting. That's Cizikas is the one who I think has the most personality in that group. Clutterbuck always seems like he wants to say something like really off color and funny, but he just doesn't because he doesn't want to get anybody.
Yeah, back. He wants to he wants to cut a wrestling promo at someone in the other locker room, but he can't do it. So it's
And Nelson is enormous. I always forget how huge he is, you know, standing next to Shannon. He makes her look like a tiny little person. Like, it's just kind of funny, they were definitely, you know, it's funny that Val said that because the third period of the game against the Canucks was vintage. Like, that the Islanders were great in that third period, and it just, if there was any hope that the Canucks had come back in that game, it was extinguished very early in that third period. They were really solid, and they kind of sewed up a 1-1-1 road trip, which, you know, isn't great, but it isn't terrible either. You know, I mean, they got 3 out of 6 possible points. And I mean, you know,
would have been terrible if the Islanders were, you know, fighting for a playoff spot where like the Canadiens or Penguins are or Hurricanes. But
yeah,
given that, you know, they've given themselves the luxury of having these opportunities, now it's up to them to not lose that.
Yeah.
But against good teams this week.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's okay. I mean, yeah, sure. 2-1 would have been better, but 1-1-1 is totally fine at this point in the season. So, we've covered a lot of stuff. It's funny. We hadn't really talked about that much, but this is a really huge week. I mean, besides the deadline, the Tavares thing, the games themselves are really huge. And I think we've covered everything. You know, for trade deadline stuff that gets more into it, you're going to have to go find somebody else because we're keeping it Islander-centric here. But it was kind of a bust. I mean, again, nothing happened until 2 o'clock, and then Stone moved just before the deadline passed. Kevin Hayes was traded to Winnipeg, who's kind of like – he was kind of like the Stone consolation prize. Wayne Simmons is a Nashville Predator now, and he apparently found out while watching TSN just like the rest of us, which that's rough, man. You really hate to see that. That's pretty terrible.
I thought he had a no trade clause, but maybe he didn't.
I think guys waived them to play in Nashville because like they wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. But I thought it was. It's funny because that trade center that is now like a parody of itself, where it is basically nothing. Right. Nothing happens, and they make a joke of that. Like the old trope was like they would just have the Cam Jansen always got traded between St. Louis and New Jersey for like a seventh round pick in like at like 9 a.m. every trade deadline, right. And they always had his phone interview. So I missed that part of it, but yeah, it was terrible to watch.
Now they had a guy in a donkey mask or horse mask, or was it a burro? I don't know what he was doing, but self parody is the best way to put it. It's almost like a very bad Canadian sketch comedy show now. I don't know. And with an
appearance from the Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister was there. I mean, it's the only show where you have a guy in a donkey mask, and then the next segment is the Prime Minister of Canada talking about the Canadians, you know? So it's kind of, at least I'm glad that that was the one time they talked about the Canadians and not the Leafs. So I guess it was worth it. But, I mean, we still watched it, but it was still, I can't believe I wasted a whole day. I don't know how those guys do it. I want to make fun of them, and I do make fun of them, but I don't envy them, because that's got to be the worst gig that those guys do all year. You know, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, we got to wrap. We've gone through a lot here, so we need to wrap it up real quick. This week's NHLnames.com NHL name of the week is
Austin Zarnik
of the Calgary Flames. Scored the game-winning goal the other day. We were going to do David Rittich, but he's not going to play. Mike Smith is going to play. So sorry, David Rittich, next time. And, we know the Capitals too well. I'm not doing, a Leaf. We also know the Flyers very well. And the Senators are, I mean, who the hell even knows who's on the Senators anymore? So this is the only guy we could really do.
That was a good one. The thing about the Senators is funny that picture that kind of circulated around, Twitter of the team 2 years ago, the team photo, and it's just like, yeah, well, no, they photoshopped them in all the whatever uniform they're in now. It's hysterical.
Oh, I gotta check that out. That'd be funny. Oh wow, I didn't even see that. All right, I'll take a look. Yeah, that's, I feel, if you know a Senators fan, man, you just give them a shoulder to cry on, because this has been a really, really bad season and a really, really bad week. And it's, you know, we've been, again, we know what it's like, so we've been there. And I would hate to see that kind of stuff visited upon anybody, especially those guys. They're sort of like the Islanders of Canada a little bit, kind of lots of arena problems, lots of bad ownership, you know, kind of stuck in the mud there. But yeah, you know, hopefully they get over it and they get sold to somebody else at some point. What else? SneakyAthletic.com. Go there, put anxiety in the discount code box, and you can save 10%. Again, great. Fort Never Lose apparel. They're going to be playing at Fort Never Lose for the rest of the season now, and including the first round of the playoffs. So get on it now. Put anxiety in the discount box. You save 10%. Again, that's sneakyathletic.com. March 16th, Offside Tavern. Noel and Dan are doing a live Isles Buzz podcast. You should go check out the Red Wings Islanders game. Stay for the live podcast. It's the Offside Tavern. Everybody knows it. It's world famous at this point. You should go. And obviously, Noel and Dan always put on a great show. Their podcast is great. And Nick Hershon, author of We Want Fish Sticks, is already going to be there. So definitely go. March 16th, Offside Tavern. You should read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. You should follow Mike on Twitter. And what is your Twitter handle again?
It's the Big Lebowski with two E's. Yeah, and I should. My friend just sent me. My friend's a musician. He just sent me a song he wrote for Thursday night. So I'm gonna get that out.
Oh,
the language might be industrial, but I'll try to get that out once he gives me the okay.
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome. Oh, we should. You know what? We had an Isles Tunes playlist section on the blog once. We should do that again. Bring it back. We've already brought back the Ghostbusters thing. We should bring that back too. I don't know if I still have the artwork somewhere. I should, but I'm interested to hear that. That'd be pretty cool. See, the John Tavares comes back, and the feelings that we all have bring about creativity and you know, kind of the muse to be creative and strike and let your feelings out. So there you go. Pretty good.
Yes, I'm excited to hear it too.
Well, check it out. So follow Mike at the Big Lebowski, and you could hear that first, and maybe we'll post it later too. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks to Kerry Haber for coming on. Seriously, he's a great guy. Follow him on Twitter. Follow those charts. If you have a question, ask him, because he is awesome when it comes to just answering the questions and helping you figure it out, because that's what we're all here for. We all just want the team to win, and any way they can. And when he says stuff like, hey, you know, this team is for real, you want to know more about it. And he's the best guy to go to, as long with Garrick and Travis. We're very lucky that we have these people that can provide us with these kinds of insights to tell us why our team is the way it is. And especially in a season like this, it's fun to see why that is. And so you can wow your friends and neighbors with information at the bar or the backyard barbecue. It'd be pretty cool. So thanks a lot. And we will talk to you again probably after that Senators game next Tuesday. And we'll see where the Islanders are. Hopefully, at the end of this big week, they're still right where they should be. All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.